Shablam.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
To everybody. I was going to say good morning, but we got people calling from all over parts of the country. So anyway, welcome to the program today. This is Dave Lincoln with Lincoln on Lending. It is Monday the 15th for those of you that are listening to this on a podcast. And we're honored and blessed again to have as a special guest with us Tom Milan. He's going to be on a little later on the program. Usually he'll step in, or at times he'll step in and do the rate update for Joe Farr when he's off and traveling. But today, we have the real live, in person, in studio, Joe Farr. Joe, good to have you
with
us.
What a build-up.
Yeah, it was just after the drum roll there. But anyway, we'll try to see if we can get Andy to put that on there. Anyway, what's going on in the markets today? And give us an update.
Well, I wish I could say that there was a lot going on, but there's really not. You know, the market's about flat, about where it ended Friday. Last week was one of the more quiet weeks we've seen in a while. There were never any real big movements intraday. A couple days where small reprices might have occurred, but really a very quiet week.
Everybody that mattered was at the CMC conference in Florida. That's why it was a quiet week.
That's right. It dominated the market.
A shameless plug. That's what that was.
Can you meet again? I'm sure the hedgers that weren't at your conference enjoyed the week because it wasn't full of many issues for them. The only thing that was announced last week that was of much significance was retail sales. It was better than expected, and initially Friday morning. We saw a pretty negative reaction to that retail sales figure, but it came right back. And so, really, even before you put out prices or you receive prices in the morning, the drop had reversed itself. Dave, it was good to see last week. We got through another round of long-term treasury auctions, 30-year and the 10-year. Both were fairly, well received and a good bid to cover ratio. The 30-year didn't have a lot of indirect bidding, but the 10-year was really quite strong. And it's always a concern that when you have as much debt being issued as our government is issuing, that sometime there's going to stop being an appetite for it. But so far so good as far as that goes last week. This week we do have some pretty significant stuff on the schedule. We've got a Fed meeting tomorrow, 2:15 Eastern time. The Fed statement will be issued. Really not a lot expected from it. I don't think anyone's looking for new revelations or significant policy changes. But as we've seen in the past, that thing is scrutinized and gone through with a fine-tooth comb, and any change in wording tends to have an impact on the market. So be on the lookout at 2:15 tomorrow Eastern time.
It's an important one.
It really. When they dominate
every one of
the market. Yeah, when they dominate the market, you listen to what they say. The other two things next week are the inflation measures, PPI on Wednesday and CPI on Thursday. Those two are expected to be fairly benign as they have been in the past, looking for, maybe a tenth of a percent increase in prices, which, on an annual basis, we still expect to see inflation very, very much in check. So, I guess it would be significant if it were a miss where inflationary pressures were bigger, but that's really not expected. To round out the week today, we got housing starts tomorrow, Philly Fed and leading indicators on Thursday. So, but really be paying attention to the Fed meeting announcement tomorrow, and then CPI and PPI, or PPI and CPI respectively, on Wednesday and Thursday. Those announcements happen at 8:30 Eastern time.
Well, we're going to have a good discussion about the MBS, the Fed's participation in the MBS purchase program in a little bit. We're going to get Tom's thoughts on that, as well as talk about many other aspects of what's going on in the industry. And, of course, the hot topic we're dedicating to today is hedging. And so we're going to be talking a lot about this. Thank you so much, Joe. And we look forward to getting further into all of that in the hot topic sections. But let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with a legislative update.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLand delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLand, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLand today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back and ready to dial into all that's going on in the legislative part of our industry. And certainly there is. Again, we thank Alice Alvey and her staff for staying on top of so much of this and helping us digest all that's going on. It's a little bit of a quiet week this last week, Alice, although there's a couple developments. You want to bring our listeners up to date on what's going on in the legislative world?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. You know, it is funny. We keep getting this, okay, any day now for us getting something on the Senate version of, something to come down the pike to give us an idea of are we going to have another regulator and what kind of Wall Street reform might be out there. So, again, the headlines are reading that this week, as a matter of fact, even they're saying today that Senator Dodd is due to put something out because he's trying to go ahead and schedule a meeting on the 22nd to work through the rule, so something's got to come out this week on the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. That was the House version of the bill. So in the Senate so far, it does look like that the New York Times reported actually that there would be a merger of the OTS and the OCC, that the FDIC would still regulate the state banks, but then essentially the Fed would take over just the absolute largest entities. So we're waiting to see. I mean, I'm even hesitant to speculate, but something is going to happen this week on that front.
Yes.
We do have the Volcker Rule, the Banking Integrity Act of 2010, which was the version in the House. This also is getting some legs. We have Senator Carl Levin, Jeff Merkley, Ted Kaufman, Sherrod Brown, and Gene Shaheen are all trying to put together a new proposal that would prevent taxpayer bailouts of the financial firms. So there's a laundry list on their version from that Senate bill that's also due out this week. They're calling it the Prop Trading Act. Protect our recovery through oversight of proprietary trading act. Oh, gosh, I can't even say it right. So,
wow.
excuse me. This one's centering on the, excuse me. The idea that
choking
we can't have.
Right,
I'm choking on it.
This one gets you to choke up, yeah?
Oh, sorry, folks, I don't have a mute button here. I can't dive for the hold button. But in any case, the bank holding companies, affiliates, could not get involved in high-risk speculative training. So that's the scoop on that front for our legislative piece. Then last but not least, as we look at our proposed rules, no movement on any of those. For those of you who are watching, it was the Reg Z changes. We're still waiting to hear what HUD is going to do with those. Then we also have the lender approval requirements, which seem to be getting a little more press. We're definitely getting indications that it looks like the broker approval on its own is going to go away. It's kind of evident by the fact FHA gave a 30-day extension for filing audited financials. So that's leading us to believe they're definitely going to try and get this paperwork off their plate. The ultimate answer is how much of it's going to end up on all the wholesalers' plates. Then, of course, that's one of the main things. And so we are also watching. There's supposed to be an FHA Safety and Soundness and Taxpayer Protection Act that's going to get introduced. And we'll watch that for you. More on all of this, it sounds like, next week.
love government intervention, and dear Lord, we're getting our fair share of it. Be careful what you wish for. You may get it.
That's right.
Alice, thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break, let you get a glass of water there.
Right.
Hit that mute button.
Sorry, everybody.
And I know how much you and your staff go into this every week. I thank you so much, and we'll be right back after this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. We should also mention that you can also dial in to or listen to the broadcast streaming from the Blog Talk Radio website. Go to blogtalkradio.com. You put in Lickin' on Lending, and up will pop our broadcast, and you'll see us streaming, so you can also listen to us that way. Our next guest is not needing an introduction at all. He is well known to many of you out there, but we want to just bring Tom on. Tom is the president and founder of Capital Markets Cooperative, based in Ponte Vedra Beach, Lord, I kind of messed that up, Tom. He's a top secondary marketing executive and recognized throughout the industry as one of the leaders. He has been hedging hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars of mortgage volume each year for the past 15 years. He has got a celebrated background, but, you know, one of the ones I enjoy is that he's a smart guy, graduated from Wharton School of Business. So, Tom, welcome to the program, and good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thanks for that introduction, and it's my pleasure to be here.
Always a pleasure. We're going to start off. We're going to get into hedging in just a minute, but there's so many people that heard you were going to be on, and they said, boy, would I love to hear what Tom has to say about the impact of the quote-unquote end of the Fed purchase, MBS purchase program. Tom, what are your thoughts? Is this, you know, it's to be anticipated. We talked about it when you were doing the rate segment while Joe was gone out of the office. And you said that there's a good chance of a likeliness of a spike in rates as much as 1%. It's generally accepted. Is that still the anticipated result, and is there more?
Well, actually, yes, there is more, and the environment has changed in the last several months. And I think, 6 months ago, perhaps, the market feared, and many mortgage bankers feared, that rates would spike by a percentage point or more when the Fed stepped aside. And, you know, fairly logical fears there, because when the buyer of 90% of the mortgages originated, announces that they may step aside, you know, pretty good shot that rates are going to go up. I will say, however, though, that things have changed fairly dramatically in the marketplace. Actually, I will give the caveat that we do expect interest rates in general to go up, and would not be surprised at all if conforming 30-year mortgage rates, you know, ended the year around 6%. But that probably does not occur because of the Fed leaving the market. And I would not have said that several months ago. Yeah, things have changed.
What is the dynamics behind those changes, Tom?
Sure. The spread widening, and now I said, you know, mortgage rates would probably end the year at 6%, and that is because of increased economic activity and interest rates in general rising, and of course mortgage rates will rise when Treasury and LIBOR rates rise. And that is, you know, the effect of economic activity, the Fed, raising short-term rates to slow economic growth, or at least remove, the level of accommodation that they've had in place for the last couple of years. But the spread widening, which was feared 6 months ago, and that is the spread between mortgage rates and Treasury rates, is very likely to be contained, meaning the spread is not expected to gap out as once feared, and therefore the rise in mortgage rates not as dramatic as once feared. And this is why. There is less supply. I don't have to tell the mortgage bankers on the line that one. Mortgage production is significantly lower today than it was in the first half of 2009. So there is just less supply to be absorbed. Historical, that's item number one. Item number two, in no particular order here, the historical fundamentals in the marketplace make current spreads fairly neutral, and those fundamentals are around things like interest rate volatility, expected prepayment speeds, et cetera, are making spreads somewhat neutral at current levels. Also an interesting one that kind of snuck in at the last minute was this concept of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac buying out mortgages from pools. We all know that Fannie
and
Freddie...
That's a recent development, too. That was just reported.
Right, and so Fannie and Freddie are going to buy out mortgages that are delinquent, you know, from pools, and you know, I could give more details there if anybody needed them, but suffice to say that those Fannie and Freddie buyouts are adding another $200 billion of purchases to the marketplace. So Fed steps aside, and lo and behold, Fannie and Freddie are standing there, you know, buying another $200 billion. So that actually creates an additional bid in the marketplace. Also, and I'm going on a bit here, but in mortgage investors do say they want to and will return to the marketplace. You know, the steep yield curve is making mortgage-backed securities, you know, continue to be a good investment for banks.
Yep.
You know, let borrow at something slightly more than zero and then lend at, you know, four, four and a half, five, as the yield may be on mortgage-backed securities. That's a great trade and continues to be a great trade.
That is really encouraging to see that the banks are really showing up in this.
Yep.
Have the potential for that.
So that, yeah, and so there are sort of this raft of reasons that the spread you know, looks to be contained, and therefore is not expected. You know, there's not expected to be this knee jerk, you know, rise in rates. You know, here at the end of March, and you know, the thing, David, that makes probably convinces me the most that you know, combine all of these things, and maybe it's true that the spread won't widen, is that the spread is not widening already, and as much as all of us on this call have been around this business, I've never seen a financial market that, you know, knows something is going to happen 2 weeks from now, the Fed's going to not buy mortgages anymore, and doesn't do anything about it today. It's like, you know, knowing stocks are going to fall 1,000 points, but, you know, they're not down, you know, 1,000 yet, right? I mean, it's like if the market is not discounting, you know, a wider spread already, you know, it is a fairly, you know, odds-on bet that maybe spreads, you know, will not gap out here in 2 weeks' time.
Do you think go ahead, Joe.
Tom, this is Joe. You know, you mentioned earlier that at one point the Fed was buying as much as 90%. I remember reading once where they said that they were buying more than what was being issued, but
right. It probably did go over 100, you know, with net, right? Yeah. On a net basis, of course, impossible. But sure, yeah, they were buying and selling, and yep.
Do you have a sense of, like this last week, they purchased $10 billion net. Do you have a sense, was that 50% of the market, 25%? I know it's hard to determine what the denominator is in that equation, but do you have a sense of how much that was?
I'm gonna, you know, this is an educated guess certainly, but I'm gonna say it's around 50, and you know, the Fed, you know, has slowed all their purchases already, right? It has been slower since the first of the year, where they've been, you know, buying every other week, right? let's do it every other week instead of every week. So the, you know, that just in and of itself, dropping the level down to 50% or 40% or some kind of level like that.
And that's another encouraging part of this, is that there are at least that many, you know, there are that many outside the Fed that are buying that aren't, you know, when the Fed's not buying, you don't see spike in yields, drop in prices, because somebody else is in there that will only buy it at higher yields. So
yeah,
that's an encouraging sign.
Yeah, it's a fascinating market phenomenon to see, you know, the 90% of the market step aside and not really have much happen, right? I would have thought we'd see at least some more volatility, which, you know, as a hedger, we don't want to see that, but I would have thought that would have come. David, I hope that answers your question.
It goes a good distance into the question. I think there's a lot of questions, and I'm reviewing emails as they come across, Tom. One of the emails that just popped in that said, you know, are we in a place where a certain level of denial is going on? Why is it there has not been more volatility? And I know you stated some of it, but there's a number of questions coming in on posts that are kind of wanting to have you expand on possibly why. And the bigger question, what I'm sensing between these questions that is coming in, reading between the lines, is are we seeing a potential that there's going to be a sudden reaction? Is there one piece of news that's going to create a tipping point and we're going to watch a lot of volatility come in the market? I'm sure a lot for the originators out there, they're trying to figure out, should I lock now? I know we always say lock now. That's the standard quote. But is there something out there that's looming that could be a single event that could cause for that volatility to happen?
And I think the answer is yes. Specific to this conversation, it appears that the Fed leaving will not be that event. The Fed gets out of the way, and then perhaps they bump short-term rates, or maybe they, you know, they enter into some repurchase agreements in the marketplace, which is a way of taking further liquidity out. Maybe we get, you know, a couple of employment reports in a row through the months that have, you know, net add of 200 to 300 to 400,000 jobs. You could combine, you know, those things and reach a tipping point, to be sure, and see rates. And that's why I think we are certainly positioned for rates to rise, towards 6% as we move forward here, because we feel like, you know, there will be a combination of events that push interest rates in general higher. It just doesn't appear that the mortgage versus treasury, you know, dynamic is going to change, you know, immediately.
Tom, do you think that the announcement, when it's made, that the Fed will begin to liquidate its portfolio of MBS? Will that be as significant as the announcement was when they said they're going to start buying it?
That certainly could scare the market. To put it mildly. And it's funny to see the Fed react to that question, you know, as it's been asked in the last, you know, month or so, and they have soft-pedaled on that one for sure, because I think everybody thinks that could scare the market.
Just got a tweet that came in. I love Twitter and all these ways we can get feedback on the program from our listeners. One of the questions is, would love to get Tom's general thoughts about the Fed and how they're handling the mortgage crisis. That's a big, big question. But a lot of people listen to you and have a great deal of respect for you. Throwing that one at you.
Thank you. I like to put me on the spot anyway. Either way. I'll take it either way. As a conservative economist, I suppose I am as scared as anybody about the massive liquidity and the massive deficits that have occurred in the last 12 to 18, 24 months. So I will start by saying that we are in uncharted territory as far as the liquidity that has flooded the market. An interesting just side note there, I did hear that, you know, the level of debt in the economy has actually declined through this whole 2-year event, right? Because consumer borrowing has declined more than government borrowing has expanded. So actually net level of debt is down. Maybe Katie bar the door if the banks really start lending and all that liquidity floods into the marketplace. But for now, as mortgage bankers, I think that, you know, so far so good. Rates are down. Liquidity has been preserved in the conforming markets. That I think is on the good side of the ledger. On the bad side of the ledger is just, you know, fear about the future. Will liquidity trigger some massive inflationary event? Will, you know, regulatory uncertainty, you know, turn into regulatory reality that dramatically changes all of our professional lives? You know, will we move to where the getting a mortgage is like going to the post office in terms of government involvement, or will we start to drift back towards, you know, more private market kind of dynamic? So I think those are the unanswered questions. I also think that, you know, that there are still, if I were to criticize, there are still, you know, obvious immediate reforms that need to be made. You know, private label securities market is still not trading. You know, I saw Michael Lewis last night on 60 Minutes make a great comment about, you know, the ratings agencies are still being compensated by the bond underwriters, and that link is kind of got us into this mess in the first place. So obvious change needed there. So just there are a lot of unanswered questions, but I think, you know, so far steering us through this, you know, crisis has been fine. It's just left us in this spot with a great uncertainty looking forward.
Yeah, we don't like that uncertainty. I tell you, everyone, all the listeners, I want to say we put Tom on the spot. We had him on coming on for our next topic. In other words, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. But we had him come on for hedging, the next topic. And we said,
Dave,
you know what, we've got such an interest on what's going on the area of the impact of MBSs. So thanks so much for on that. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, are making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. This is David Lickin with Lickin on Lending. Sorry there, Tom. I was wondering if we were losing you in our last dialogue. I'm wondering if I'm having some audio issues. But let's get into the next topic. And Alice, we'll have you jump in on this as well. And a lot of issues surround the topic of going from best efforts to mandatory. Would you care to introduce this topic, Alice?
Oh, yeah, that'd be fine. I guess I know we have a lot of customers right now who look at, you know, what's involved. Is it as simple as I get paid more, right? Some of them have no idea on the dynamic involved, not only from an execution, secondary execution standpoint, but also from an operational standpoint. So I guess it's probably best to start with, you know, the secondary issues and hear what Tom has to say on that.
Okay, great. David, can you hear me okay?
I hear you now fine. I think we fixed the problem.
Okay, great. Well, this is a large and complex topic, but one that we routinely speak to bank boards about and many other folks. As David said in his very kind introduction, you know, Capital Markets Cooperative and the management team here have hedged literally into the hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars worth of loans. So we've learned a thing or two along the way. And probably the first thing to address is, you know, what is the reward that you can expect from hedging? And, you know, we're at an interesting point in many ways in the market timing. Last year, 2009, you know, specifically the first half of last year saw, you know, very large origination volumes and very large rewards to be had from hedging. So I think maybe many listeners, you know, are aware of that, but I want to just give a little more perspective there. You know, large rewards, you know, CMC, you know, delivered net hedging gains to its client base in 2009, you know, just shy of 100 basis points. That is a huge, historical, incredible number. Although I'd like to take full credit for it and say it was all due to CMC, you know, the market frankly delivered an enormous return in the best efforts versus mandatory world last year. Those of you that...
It was unprecedented. We've never seen anything.
Yep.
I should ask
yep.
that. Do you recall ever seeing anything at those levels before?
No, and it's been many years, you know, since that we've seen that, and you know, there's certainly, you know, back in the Alt-A days, which I don't count that as many years ago, you know, there were Alt-A pools that could be sold up 300 basis points to a unwitting buyer and those kinds of things. But excluding those sort of market outliers on core conforming and govy product, you know, those kinds of gains are unheard of, and I will say, unlikely to repeat themselves anytime soon. Looking forward, I think, you know, net gains, you know, should be expected in around the 20 to 30 basis point arena. And that, you know, conforms to long-term averages. We have, you know, many years of detailed performance history here at CMC, and happy to review that with anybody that is interested, that show that, you know, year in, year out, gains to be had from hedging, you know, in a disciplined manner are about 20 basis points. It maybe pop up to 40 basis points in a good year, and frankly go down to, you know, 10 basis points or so in a bad year. I will note that we are very proud of our 2008 results here, you know, which saw the most volatile market that any of us have ever known, and actually our hedge gains for 2008 were a positive 20 basis points. So that was
that's
something else when you look at that.
Well, Tom, how much volume do you recommend that a company have closing on a monthly or annual basis, whichever you feel is a better benchmark, before they, you know, they start crossing over into being able to consider mandatory?
At least $10 million,
okay.
And at least $10 million of hedgeable product
a month.
A month. That's right, not a year.
No, I know.
So
about 100. I thought it was more like 150 million a year, perhaps.
Right, and I'm not sure. That's that you know, in that range is about right. And actually, I don't like to lead with, you know, the rewards from hedging, and we always talk about the risks first.
Sure.
But I so let me maybe back up just a moment, and I'll say that the risks of hedging are actually not, you know, as the biggest risk is in the data, in data integrity, data control, process control around the data. You know, by far the biggest, you know, mistakes that we've seen, and we actually get business here from other people making mistakes, and they come to us to help them figure it out. Those mistakes and hedging losses, by and large, come from data problems. The bank CFO is always scared of market volatility, and that's what's going to kill us. But that is actually ranks pretty far down the list in terms of, you know, of causes of hedging losses. The big losses come from data problems. So,
and,
you know, those of you that are looking, go ahead, Alice.
Now I was going to say, and you mean data problems in the sense of, you know, your actual loan data itself that's coming from your loan origination system.
Yeah, if you think you're hedging a $50 million pipeline and it's really $100 million, you have a problem.
Oh yeah, and data. So quality
that's the kind of data problem.
We've walked into loans, companies where the, you know, like you said, they think that this stuff's closed. Maybe it's closed, but it's missing documentation. It's nowhere ready to be delivered. So explain maybe on some of the other data elements you see that are common that are people don't get right or aren't
tracking properly. It's control. It's having the right loans in the system to begin with, knowing when they are locked or not locked. Data controls also lead to, you know, higher percentages of pull through, which is a good thing. If you have a bunch of, you know, loans that maybe aren't real, or loan officers can just lock loans in a system that, you know, maybe aren't, you know, so, you know, real with the borrower or what have you. So that all affects pull through. So there are those problems. There are also price validation issues in hedging. Pricing on loans in the pipeline, if loans have been all priced at par when they should really really be at 99. That's an issue. So pricing, testing, and validation, mark-to-market on a daily basis to catch pricing errors, that's another big area of data that you need to be aware of. So, you know, believe it or not, you would think as sort of market guys, and we've spent so much time talking economics even on this radio program, you know, you'd think we talk about the market a lot when we talk about hedging, but we really don't. We certainly talk about the market some, but it's really if you get the blocking and tackling done around data and process and daily audit and control, you know, the market almost takes care of itself. You know, I think 2008 is certainly great evidence of that. You know, blocking and tackling all along the way, loans coming in, loans coming out, tracking down locks, making sure pricing is right. You get all that right, and at least your odds are significantly increased towards getting a positive hedging result. So have a robust database. Those of you out there that are operating off of, say, you know, Calyx Point, which is really just an origination system and a terrific system at that, you know, maybe not robust enough to support a hedging program. I would suggest databases like DataTrack, just to pick a name, that, you know, is a terrific system to support, you know, data handling and maintenance and the data points that are required for supporting a hedging program. So it's really having the robust database.
And I want to just jump in on that note. I mean, we know the folks at Del Mar Database very well, and Rob and Michelle and group there, who I think were just out at your conference, can really help someone sort through a lot of those data issues if they're there and where they're at. And if you get a good data system in your that you're looking at, it's so critical. A good company will come in and help you resolve a lot of those issues as you go consider your strategy. Joe, jump in here. I know you've got a lot of questions, and a lot of your customers are asking you a lot of questions on this topic.
Yeah, and I guess the formula for determining if you should do this is, you know, you talk about the upside and in a normal environment, it's 20 to 30 basis points on some number of volume. What should people consider as the out-of-pocket costs? And you know, one thing that I learned just recently is that a lot of warehouse lenders that begin to sell on a mandatory basis if you have hired a CMC or one of the other hedge consultants.
That is correct, and thank you for saying that, Joe. And I'll take that and maybe run with it a little bit. Here are the requirements. You know, Alice asked about the volume. You know, call it somewhere between $100 and $150 million of product a year, and that's, you know, conforming and Govy product combined. So if you're producing that much, you're probably a pretty good candidate to take a look at a hedging program. You certainly want to have a central lock desk. Sometimes that goes without saying, but, you know, having the loan officers locking directly, you know, with investors, et cetera, probably not a great way to go. So central lock desk at corporate headquarters. A $2 million net worth at least, you know, to be considered for so many things these days in the business. You know, $2 million is, you know, $2 million is the new $500,000, but, you know, there's $2 million at least, and the more the better on the net worth side. And you want to have good data, but you also want to have, you know, control of of your pull through. We typically like to look at 6 months of historical pipeline performance before hedging a single loan. Analyze that performance: what pulled through, what fell out, what types of loans, how do they react in certain interest rate environments. So, not only is current data important, but historical data is important too in terms of predicting the performance of your pipeline. You will want to get approved with warehouse lenders to do mandatory. You will want to get approved with investors to sell them mandatory. It's a different level of improvement, approval, at, say, Wells Fargo to do mandatory rather than best efforts. So that's a different level of approval. You will want to get trading lines in place with securities dealers to be able to place hedges, and that's another level of approval instead of counterparties that you need to be concerned familiar with. We, of course, and I know that David's firm, you know, involved in helping people through all of those approval processes, but that's just another thing that needs to be in place. And then Joe's kindly said that, you know, a secondary marketing service provider, you know, I've been in this business so many years that it did not used to be the case that outsource secondary marketing, outsource risk management was the norm. It is the norm today. In fact, we have clients today that you know, their warehouse lenders require them to use us, use CMC as a hedger to be able to do mandatory commitments. It's literally in the document with the warehouse lender. I guess the, you know, for all of the reasons of controls around our organization and third-party oversight, et cetera, you know, it makes good sense to outsource to a shop like ours.
Go ahead. That's such a great point. I think that's such a great point that we want to emphasize. There's a number of people that have done hedging that say they have a strong secondary background. I tell you the fact that the warehouse bankers are now moved from we'd rather have you someone in-house to someone to utilizing CMC or a outsourced solution is really underscoring the point that there's been a lot of problems with some of the in-house systems. And the fact that the warehouse lenders are going that way cannot be underscored enough. I encourage you, if you're looking at doing this, and that's not to say that you don't have qualified people on staff. In fact, I also would say that if you have someone qualified to understand that, let them be the point person in interacting with someone, you know, the staff at CMC. It makes the job easier, and there's a better appreciation. But do not try to do this alone, especially as we're heading in. We were talking earlier in the program about the potential volatility that could be coming into the market. And as evidenced by 2008 and the success that CMC had in that volatile year, and they were able to keep a lot of companies off of the rocks and find themselves in deep trouble in the hedge positions. And those that didn't have that, unfortunately, are not here to talk about it because they did not have all the knowledge and expertise that's there. So, Tom, sorry for interrupting you there, but I really want to underscore that point. A lot of guys are saying, well, do I need to keep my hedging guy? Well, I think it's a great investment. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, we at CMC to do to hedge for someone, you know, need a very strong counterpart in secondary marketing at the mortgage company. So, and we're always very careful. We don't want to, because without somebody very strong on the other side, we don't know, you know, if the audits and controls are being implemented correctly on the other side. And of course, you know, dealing with investors and agencies and warehouse providers and stuff is more than a full-time job for a solid secondary person at the mortgage company. So we're really, you know, we're a partner in the effort. And you know, down our client list, there are countless examples of terrific secondary people that we work with and could not accomplish what we do without them. It's a two-way street, and I just think that the concept of having a third party involved, and you know, frankly, it's less expensive too. This business, you know, we can manage a number of positions here, and therefore deliver, you know, a higher level of service at a lower cost that then can be accomplished internally. So that's just, they're just basic economics around doing things outsourced as well that makes sense.
And Dave, if I could jump in, it's also the operational side. You know, we're really just talking about one part of it. And, of course, me with my operations hat on, you know, when you think of what your entire system has to go through in order to be able to accommodate this, and you both touched on just the idea of so many shops allow loan officers to work directly with an investor to lock a loan. Just that transition alone, say, what do you mean? I can't let my loan officers keep doing that. I have to have a centralized rate desk. That concept right there scares a lot of people about, wow, you know, there's a big sell job here for the sales staff.
Right. And I think it's important to note if you know, companies that are listening are thinking of going onto the hedge front, you know, hey, I heard, you know, the guy down the street picked up 80 basis points on the hedge last year. I got to get into this thing. There's disappointment ahead because it's really, you know, one of our top clients likes to say you got to be in it to win it, And that means that it's a long-term proposition. You know, you're just consistent blocking and tackling every day. And you know what? The year's going to come along where you do make an additional 80 basis points, but there's some times when you're not going to make anything either. And it's going to, you know, feel like a futile effort. But, you know, in those, and to your point, Alice, on the operations, I mean, our guys, that you know, they realize, you know, significant operational efficiency on the mandatory, too. You try to start locking, you know, hundreds of best efforts locks, you know, a week, a month, a day, what have you. That's operationally difficult relative to, you know, delivering, you know, $10, $20 million pools to Wells Fargo, for example.
Right.
Well, I think there's one, you know, when I first started working with you, Tom, and your group, flew in there to your beautiful offices and sat down, and we were talking about several of our clients. And I really want to underscore this. A lot of people say, well, I think I want to do it in-house. Well, first of all, I think it's going to be an obstacle for you with some of the warehouse, an increasing number of the warehouse bankers, number one. Number two, but you're giving up a valuable piece of advice. Tom, I can't remember the client was, but I still have this image of there was like six of us sitting in your office, and we were talking about a particular company. That company wasn't there. We were talking strategies. We're talking about, you know, what they need to do, how they could shift their focus. And you look at the collective years of experience that were in that room talking about that business owner's business. It was invaluable, the feedback that he got as a result of that. It is so important, listeners, that if you are considering a head strategy, make sure you get with a group of people that are going to surround you with the knowledge, wisdom, and experience and understanding of what to do and how to execute in these, I think, what's going to be troubling times ahead. And if you have that, there's an old proverb that says, in an abundance of counselors, wage war. And it's going to feel like war. I think it sometimes already does, especially with all the legislative initiatives going on, Tom.
Agreed. And you know, I appreciate that, and it is very true. It's not an easy task, and the more minds around the concept, the better.
Tom, a question for you.
Yes.
I'm sure you have customers that are big enough that can deal directly with primary dealers, and I know you have customers that probably don't have the net worth sufficient to deal directly with the primaries and have to go to the regional dealers.
Yep.
Do you see a big difference in the execution going through a regional dealer? Is it 5 basis points, 10? Does that eat into that 20 or 30 basis points in that pickup if you have to go through the regional guys?
Well, and you know, our guys deal by and large with regionals, so those numbers I quoted, you know, were net of, you know, any wider spread that the regionals might charge. Excuse me. And you know, I'm going to quantify it in you know, a 32nd perhaps, so you know, maybe 3 or 4 basis points. And you know, that really, you know, that would be if you sold the bond and then bought it back in every occasion instead of doing, you know, AOTs, et cetera, and, you know, different ways to reduce transaction costs, and of course, you know, selling direct to the agencies and delivering those bonds, you know, ways to reduce that differential. So nothing wrong with going with the regionals. There is a very hot topic, very current topic around the regional dealer community today, and that is the concept of posting margin for securities.
Right.
And not to be so esoteric on this call, but you know, for so many years, the concept was, you know, sell the bond forward 2 or 3 months and then settle up 2 or 3 months from now. That's unlike any other financial market in the world where margin and collateral have to be posted to trade. And just so people are aware, there is definitely a strong trend in the regional dealer community towards requiring margin from their sellers. So it's an additional capital requirement to move onto the hedge, one that can be minimized and frankly is not a showstopper, but just so perhaps you've heard it here first, there is a move towards margining mortgage-backed securities trades, you know, unlike we have seen in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, at least in this segment of the market. The primary dealers have always had to post margin to the MBSCC, but the smaller guys have typically not.
That could have an impact on you know, how much cash you have and how much you can lever that cash if you just to consider you have probably a 2-point haircut on your warehouse line and you you're probably making loans a little bit above par, one or two above par. So that's 2 to 4,
yeah.
And then you have a little bit of a haircut at the regional broker dealer.
And all in can
impact your mark here.
Right, and all in, just in case anybody wants to know the numbers. I mean, all in, the margins are you know, probably 20 or 30 basis points on overall production. You know, on a particular trade, they could be half a point or a point or what have you. But, you know, spread it across the production, and then the ways you can minimize the margins required, you know, 20 or 30 basis points. So if you're operating with a 4% all-in haircut today, you might go to, you know, 420 basis points with this margin
move that's going on.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's something, and you know, in these days where cash is limited, you know, it's the you know, it is a bit of an issue, but not a showstopper.
Okay.
We've going to take a quick break and be right back. We're going to be talking, wrapping up this topic, but we're also going to be talking a little bit about the condition of FHA. There's a lot of information coming to us right now, and there's questions about the FHA, its future, and we're going to be talking about that after we come back right after this break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Schrott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Schrott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Schrott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Schrott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Schrott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Schrott, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Good to have you back. This is David Lincoln. Tom Milan, it is so good to have you as a guest. I just love listening to you talk about these topics. And I just encourage so many people to reach out to you. Before we go on to the next segment that we're going to be, the next topic we're going to go on to, would like to have, make sure we get your contact information here. Would you give the phone number clearly and slowly for everybody so they can dial in and call you with additional questions?
Absolutely, and thanks for the kind words again. The phone number here is area code 904-543-0052. Again, 904-543-0052.
And again,
Tom Milan with the Capital Markets Cooperative.
Yep, sorry, yep, Tom Milan, Capital Markets. I apologize for speaking over there.
Yeah.
I want you to
come
in, man. Number one is they're a great group. We sit down. You're just going to enjoy the wisdom, knowledge that comes from, but they're just a great group of people. You're going to get a lot of great insights in how to grow your business in an intelligent way. Tom, one of the topics that Alice and Joe and I were talking in our pre-program discussion was the condition of FHA and where that's going. Alice, we were visiting on what you've been reading. There's been recent reports of what's going on. Would you bring that out for our listeners, and let's get into the discussion about the condition of FHA.
Well, it was last week there was testimony out in the House Financial Services Subcommittee on Housing and Community Opportunity. So there was a hearing on the FHA Reform Act of 2010, which doesn't even have actually a bill yet. It's just in draft right now from what I can find from Maxine Waters, and still trying to get our hands on a final version of that draft. So we had Commissioner Stevens, we had members of the Mortgage Bankers Association and economists all speak to, you know, what is the condition of FHA. And Commissioner Stevens is trying to be, you know, somewhat optimistic that they have a plan and that FHA is not going to need bailing out by, not going to be the next subprime. But it seems more and more people are feeling a little bit more concerned about what are the odds of that, and what are the measures that really have to be put in place for FHA to not be the next subprime? So what's on the table, I think, that everybody's aware of is April 15th, we're due to get a 2.25% upfront MIP. But there's lots of other things on the table. What should they do about underwriting? And so I guess I wanted to put it out on the table here for us to talk about is, you know, one, from a secondary market standpoint, do you feel that, you know, from your viewpoint, does FHA look like, you know, what kind of shot do we have that FHA is going to need a bailout? Do you think it's a 50-50 shot, or do you think, no, they look like they're going to be able to hang in there? I was interested in Tom and Joe's opinion. So,
Tom?
I was waiting for it to, yeah, Joe. Yeah, no. And you know, sure, it does appear that, and with all due respect to Dave Stevens, who is a friend and I think doing a terrific job over there, and it appears they are certainly on the brink of need of bailout, and I think that even more relevant for the mortgage banking community is the prospect of some sort of repurchase activity, you know, loans getting pushed back from Ginnie Mae to, you know, large aggregators and then to, you know, to originators, you know, add the FHA to the pile with Fannie and Freddie and the repurchase issue, which was, I think, the biggest concern for everybody that was at our conference last week, and you know, the biggest concern in the marketplace right now, you know, could just be exacerbated by loans coming back from the FHA.
They've definitely said that's going to increase as if it isn't bad already. And you know, we're looking at from a risk standpoint, what are the things that they're looking at putting in place? It does look like we should see a proposal of sorts, whether legislatively, to get that up, the annual MIP up as much to 1.5% potentially. Right now, it's at 0.5% annually.
Right.
So you know, if they pump some liquidity into it. You know, I think they've just got to get past and offset the legacy problem that they have out there when they were doing the down payment assistance. So it's what, a 2007, part of 2008, I'm sure 2006 pipeline problem that they've got to try and offset here.
Well, it's a catch-22 a little bit, isn't it? Because they need to increase revenues fairly significantly in order to cover the cost of the prior loans made. But if they do that too much, they're not going to be the solution for, you know, lenders that they are now, so their demand's going to go down significantly.
Yeah, it looks a little bit like they're going to back off of trying to change the down payment across the board. Would you agree that it's just going to, it looks like it's going to stick with the lower credit scores needing higher down payments?
I don't know if I agree or disagree, but it makes sense that the lower, I mean, it's risk-based pricing you know, FHA has never been significantly involved in that, and it's probably time that they do.
That seems to be solidly the evidence that that is going to be the case, Alice, from what we're hearing.
And the conduits have led the way already on that.
Yeah.
If we look at the book of business that we sold to the conduits in early 2009, as recent as that, you know, they're actually on the FHA side significantly lower scores than would be possible today. And just the nature of, you know, Wells and B of A and the others, you know, ratcheting down their guidelines around FHA, regardless of FHA's ultimate requirement.
We've got 2 minutes left, and I want to make a really strong point. There's so many people that say, I want to be able to get into hedging. I want to be able to start doing Ginnie Mae's securities because I want to have a workaround to the credit overlays. I'll tell you, that sets the hair up in the back of my neck right now. I want to hear someone say that, because it is what they're saying is, I want to adversely select myself and put my company at risk for being shut down by FHA. And I don't think there's anything that is more alarming to that. We've got literally 1 minute left before we're going to hear the music start up here. Tom, I just want to say thank you so much for being a part of the program again, and we value the relationship that we have. Folks, we do hedge model validation for their banking clients. We're thrilled to be involved with this company. Call them. They're dependable and a great resource for you.
Likewise, thrilled to be here, David. Thank you very much.
As always, I thank Alice and Joe. Of course we thank Tom. We already thanked him. But I thank Joe, Alice, thank you so much for being a part of what we're doing here. Folks, stay tuned to us. Come back every week. And also remember, you can find us on Blog Talk Radio on the website, and you can get that podcast downloaded and listen to it in the car while you're driving around. We are here to digest the news each week so you don't have to be stuck doing that. You could be out doing your business. Tune in. Pass this around to your friends. We look forward to talking to you next week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.